Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you, as usual. And both our good and bad come from stories that usually happen around this time in an odd-numbered year, and that's announcements that folks are not going to run for re-election. But let's start with the good. Utah's 4th Congressional District, there's only one Democrat in the House of Representatives from the Utah delegation. It's Jim Matheson. He was barely reelected in 2012 over a fantastic Republican candidate named Mia Love, who is a mayor out there in Utah. She is challenging him again, and he has decided, perhaps for other reasons as well, but I'm sure the fact that she's running again is a major reason that he announced on Tuesday he will not be seeking an 8th term to the House of Representatives. And so the Republican field had pretty much already cleared out for Mia Love. Matheson was kind of the only Democrat, it seemed like, Jim, who had a chance to win that seat. And now that he's out of the field, not only will Republicans probably pick up a seat, but we're about to see a Republican star in Mia Love.
I agree with almost all of that, Greg. I was just going to point out that you are correct that Matheson is one of those guys where the National Republican Congressional Committee, every election night, would be just banging their head against the wall saying, how did we not beat this guy? This is an R plus 14 district. This is Utah, you know. And Matheson would always say, well, I'm not like those Nancy Pelosi Democrats. And, you know, always persuaded just enough voters in this district to hold on by the skin of his teeth time and again. As much as I would like to credit it to the impending tsunami that is Mia Love in this district, I do actually think it's probably a bigger factor of Obamacare and just the shape of the 2014 midterms becoming sure. clear. That he has hung on in 2010, which was a pretty rough year. He hung on in 2012 with Mitt Romney at the top of the ticket, you know, in Utah. And he still managed to hold on. I think he may have felt like, you know, he was pressing his luck. But he also has been very open about his interest in either running for Senate or governor in Utah someday. And I'm going to guess that as the Utah Democrat, singular, he's, you know, he's at some point he maybe, you know, he's got a very good chance of getting the nomination for those things. And who knows? Maybe someday Utah will have a Democratic senator or a Democratic governor. Obvious good chance for a pickup for Republicans. Chances are whoever wins the primary is going to win the general. A little bit of talk about either a member of the Huntsman family running or the Romney family running. As somebody who's not a huge fan of dynasties, I think Mia Love looks just fine to me. I don't really feel the need for, you know, hey, let's go find somebody who's well known for being the child of some other lawmaker. Not holding a lot of appeal to me, but I guess we'll see how it shakes out. And ultimately, it's always in the hands of the, you know, voters in the district. But obviously, very good chances for a Republican pickup there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wonder if this was a relatively recent decision for Matheson, because he was one of the very few Democrats who voted to defund Obamacare. So he was clearly, I think, voting that way in anticipation of running. And maybe he just saw the ongoing rollout being such a debacle and it being a tough seat to defend in just in normal circumstances. So, and yes, the last thing any of us need in Washington is more huntsmen. Let's just admit that right now. On to martini number two now. And as excited as we are about Utah, and we just saw a slugfest of a governor's race in Virginia, we could now see a very, very competitive congressional race just outside the nation's capital, Virginia's 10th congressional district. Frank Wolf is retiring after 17 terms at the end of this Congress. Obviously, that's 34 years. Wolf has been conservative in many areas, not necessarily in all areas, but the areas where he's best known is just being an ardent defender of human rights around the world, religious freedom around the world. He's been a leader on Benghazi and trying to get the truth out about that in the last few years. And he's just had an absolute iron grip on this district. So it's, you know, in the D.C. suburbs, and obviously that's been infiltrated by a lot more left-leaning voters as of late, as we've seen in presidential and other statewide maps after the votes are counted. But, Jim, I think it's still a seat that the Republicans certainly have a chance to hold on to, but it's going to be a lot tougher, a lot more money to be spent there, and we lose Frank Wolf.
Worth noting, you'll see a lot of discussion about the moderate Frank Wolf. And actually, he earned his moderate stripes in a slightly different way than you usually see, in that he was, you know, pretty much a down-the-line social conservative, anti-abortion, pro-life, all of those issues. Very involved in foreign policy, very active in human rights, probably a bit more on the hawkish side. But, you know, interestingly, in economics, he was not necessarily a down-the-line conservative. And I think this is, you know, you can explain this perhaps by his philosophy, but also I think quite a bit by his geography. This is Fairfax County. This is, I believe it includes Langley, which includes, you know, CIA headquarters and such. It's an R plus one or plus two district. This is a really nominally Republican suburban district outside of D.C., and it has quite a few government employees. So Frank Wolf is not going to be the guy saying, let's cut the government, cut the government, cut the government. Because when he says, you know, if he were to say something like that, his constituents would be saying, hey, wait a minute, that might be me. When we head into the primary for this, a bunch of big names being mentioned, including Barbara Comstock, who's a state delegate, longtime friend of National Review, one of the first people to say the Kerry Spot was a great blog. I'll always be appreciative to her for that. Also, Arthur Davis, the African-American Democrat turned Republican, was a congressman from Alabama for several terms, moved up to Virginia, lives in the district, and has reportedly exploring the possibility there. I think it's worth noting that because of the nature of this district, you're not going to get a Tea Party favorite. You're going to get a Republican who is comfortable with the federal government, or at the very least, let's say a law and order federal government. This will not be an advocate of government shutdowns. This will not be a Ted Cruz Republican. You'll probably get one who is, if they're going to try to cut the government, is probably going to be very careful about it, and is always going to, be very careful not to paint with a broad brush of demonizing federal employees. And my attitude would be to everybody who's not in that district, you got to let that district pick the one they want. You can't expect a libertarian type to run in a district that's got a lot of government employees, or else it's just not going to work out that well. So my guess is we will get somebody who will be conservative in some areas and perhaps not in others, and not the way we'd like to see. But I'd much rather have a, you know, nominally conservative or semi-conservative Republican in this seat than a down-the-line liberal like Jim Moran is in the district that I'm sitting in right now.
And I certainly have experienced that with Jim Moran in years past as well. Definitely a good job there setting the expectations, Jim, for those who, if we can get a Republican elected there, might not be thrilled with every vote that that person casts. I think Wolf did the party a favor by not retiring in a presidential election year, because then the suburbs really tend to look more blue. So the upside for the Republicans is that since it's a midterm year, better chance of holding the seat. On to Martini number three now. And when Piers Morgan and Barbara Walters get together, well, that's just must-see TV. She was on his program, I believe, last night, talking about, you know, the promotion for her most fascinating people. And Piers Morgan was aghast that the folks from Duck Dynasty were on there, but President Obama was not on the most fascinating list, because if there's anybody Piers Morgan's going to relate to, Jim, let's be honest, it's going to be the Duck Dynasty people. Here's Piers Morgan just aghast at not only the fact that he's off the list, but wondering why kind of the bloom is off the rose for President Obama.
Why is Obama facing so much opposition now? Why is he struggling so much to really fulfill the great flame of ambition and excitement that he was elected on originally in 2009?
Well, you've touched on it to a degree. He made so many promises. We thought that he was going to be, I shouldn't say this at Christmas time, but the next Messiah. And the whole Obamacare, or whatever you want to call that, Affordable Health Act, it just hasn't worked for him. And he stumbled around on it. And people feel very disappointed because they expected more.
Jim, that's pretty much what we always thought the Democrats thought of Obama. Now we just know for sure.
Greg, I listen to that clip and think, I don't know about you, I really miss Gilda Radner right now. So first of all, what she says, we thought of him as the Messiah. What's this we, Kemosabe? You know, quite a few of us didn't see him as the Messiah. In fact, you guys thinking he was the Messiah is a big factor in why we're in this mess. Or perhaps it's that, you know, if no one else believed in him as the Messiah, maybe he wouldn't think of himself as the Messiah, as his narcissism suggests. I also like the comment that she shouldn't say this at Christmas time, compare the President of the United States to the Messiah. You know, I think it's kind of a bad idea 365 days a year, 366 in a leap year, okay? Just always a bad idea. He's not the Messiah. Let me make that clear. And she's not the only one who did this. As I mentioned in the Morning Jolt the other day, there's an Irish journalist named Niall O'Dowd who got to visit the White House for the Christmas party, and he said, waiting in line to meet President Obama and First Lady Michelle is a little like waiting for communion. No, it's not. Is waiting involved in both? Then yes. Yes, it is. But then, you know, but then technically you could say waiting in line at 7-Eleven is also like waiting for communion at church too. So, you know, that there's a line. The bread lines in the Soviet Union were like, you know. So there you go. I mean, there's, you know, it's kind of interesting that this really kind of disturbed. Here we are 5 years into a presidency that, if not a colossal failure on every front, no one would say this economy is roaring and doing terrific. the right track, wrong numbers are looking really terrible. It's not like Syria is a sterling victory for this administration. Ed Snowden's leaking all of our secrets. Obamacare is a disaster. The partisan rancor in Washington is worse than it's ever been before. And John Podesta, the guy who's being brought in to right the ship, just wrote today that the Republican Party is like the Jim Jones cult, drinking Kool-Aid. Yeah, like, I mean, nothing has gotten better on this man's watch. And here we are, and we still have people kind of casually comparing him to a messianic or Jesus figure. And it's pretty galling. And I think one of the this is a very distinctly unhealthy phenomenon in our political culture, and I think it goes well with the the dear leader instructing us to talk about Obamacare at Thanksgiving and things like that. I mean, somewhere around 2007-8, perhaps out of a Bush derangement system, the traditional role for political leaders just got, like, the boundaries just evaporated, and Obama was able to fill this larger than life role that he is really just fundamentally unsuited for. And so, you know, it'd be nice if, you know, in 2016 we could elect a president who we expect to be a president and not actually being this, you know, godlike figure who will step down into the presidency.
Yeah. I hate to say it after that.
You got to have that really great, inspiring finish to our third martini.
We have to do better in 2016, but let's do better in 2014 first. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please join us again on Thursday for the next Three Martini Lunch.